Welcome back as we continue our journey here and through Roy Schoeman's book, Salvation is from the Jews. We're continuing with Chapter 6, the ideological foundations of the Nazi movement. And we ended the last show where you were discussing the attacks on Christianity from the occult.
That's right, from the occult stream that flowed into Nazism.
Right.
Let me just kind of recap a little bit to establish a foundation, which is, in a sense, what we're talking about is the, as you mentioned, the ideological foundations of Nazism, and that there were two or three streams that flowed directly into Nazism, which, if you look at those streams flowing into Nazism, you see that they are all directly diabolical. They're all inspired by Satan. I know that's not a popular way to say things nowadays, but it's clearly true if you look at them, which is a reason to look at them. And those streams that we've been looking at are eugenics and occultism. And since they are flowing directly from the enemy of Christ and Christianity, it's not surprising that Nazism should have also flowered with a very precise and comprehensive anti-Christianity and a desire and plan for eliminating Christianity. And we ended the last show in talking about the fact that destroying Judaism meant destroying the Jewish bloodline, because Jewish identity flowed through the blood, and destroying Christianity meant destroying the Christian faith and the Christian churches, because Christianity flows through the faith and the sacraments and the institution of the church. And so, and unfortunately, this isn't all that well known today. There's some people naively think that the Nazis were Christian. I mean, they were Christian historically, in the sense that the individuals who became Nazis began their life as Christians. But they weren't Christian in the sense that the Nazi spirituality, the Nazi ideology, was a Christian one. It wasn't at all. It was a purely pagan one, that if it had its roots anywhere, you can trace those roots to occultism and to Hinduism, frankly, rather than to Christianity. So that's where I want to kind of start now and talk about some of the evidence of the anti-Christianity of Nazism, of the Nazi movement. And it will indirectly then serve as a defense against the accusation that basically a slander against Christianity, that Nazism was somehow, you know, a reflection of Christianity or a kind of an outgrowth of Christianity, when in fact it was an outgrowth of anti-Christianity. Right. Now, I talked in the earlier show about the Thule Society, the cult society, which was Hitler's first springboard to public prominence, and where the head of the society bragged about introducing possession, basically diabolical possession, into Hitler. And there was another member of the Thule Society named Alfred Rosenberg, who began life as the son of a shoemaker. He became prominent by importing the Protocols of the Elders of Zion from Russia to Germany. That is a famous anti-Semitic fiction. It's it purports to be the minutes of a secret meeting of these Jews who are planning to control the world. It was exposed as a forgery within a few years of its publication, where it came from, and, you know, kind of, it's a long story. There was actually a copy of an earlier fake expose of another group, not even the Jews, and they just replaced the name of the other group with the name Jew and so forth. But it still holds currency today in the anti-Semitic world as evidence of the Jewish conspiracy. So he introduced that into Germany, and he eventually was made the head theologian of the Nazi Party.
And theologian.
Yes, the primary theologian of the Nazi Party. And his job was to develop a plan to eliminate Christianity and replace it with the new Nazi religion, which is going to be a Germanic neo-paganism.
I was surprised to read that initially, because, and that's where I said head theologian, because I don't think many people attribute theology to the Nazis, or that they would have had a theologian. But
the Nazi movement was entirely theological, as movements of the devil always are. And we'll have a chance to talk about that. But there's no question that in the Nazi world, Hitler was the Messiah, and he consciously identified himself as the Messiah. People have heard of the thousand-year reign of the Third Reich. Have you heard that expression, right, the thousand-year reign? Does a thousand-year reign echo with anything biblical?
So it's a direct mocking of Christianity.
Right? Isn't there a thousand-year reign of Christ in the book of Revelation? When he comes again, there'll be a thousand-year reign. The Third Reich was to be the true realization of the Messiah, only Christianity had it wrong. Christianity was the wrong religion. Hitler portrayed himself as the Messiah. And at other times in history, maybe even in our own, we will find charismatic political leaders who quite consciously are taking on the mantle of messiahship to intoxicate people with enthusiasm for the worst of evils. Let the reader beware.
Well stated.
So anyway, let me read from Alfred Rosenberg. Today, a new faith is awakening the myth of the blood, the belief that the divine being of mankind generally is to be defended with the blood, the faith embodied by the fullest realization that the Nordic blood constitutes that mystery which has supplanted and overwhelmed the old sacraments. So this myth of the superiority of the Aryan blood that we talked about in the last two episodes was the truth which was to supplant and overwhelm the old sacraments. Okay, so it's like the sacraments were the false version, and the racial superiority of the Aryans of the Nordic blood was the real version of the perfection of mankind. The same Alfred Rosenberg drew up a program for the new church, which was to be called the National Reich Church. Now, this program was never fully implemented. But remember, when Hitler came to power in 1933, his entire constituency, you know, they were Protestants and they were Catholics.
Right.
And many of them took Christianity seriously. And it was going to take time to corrupt them, and in particular to raise the new generation purified of Christian belief, essentially, and then sell this, you know, this new church to the new generation. So he didn't have a chance to actually implement all of this, but the plans were drawn up. And his attack, by the way, was on the youth. In other words, Hitler Youth, and I'll have a chance to talk about that, had a lot in the Hitler Youth program, which was designed to strip their Christian beliefs away and replace them with these Nazi beliefs, so that then when they grew up, you know, they could fully embrace the new religion.
Well, then Hitler Youth was the wolf in sheep's clothing, because when it first came out, even the Protestant and pastors and the priest weren't sure if it was a bad thing. And yet then you show, as they went further into it, they would come out and warn.
Yeah, but I would say that's what you see today. And in other words, the problem is that men of religion want to think the best about people. And they kind of, they want peace rather than war. So they bend over backwards to give charitable interpretations to things that don't always deserve charitable interpretations. So anyway, going back to the National Reich Church of Rosenberg, these are some of the elements of its program. The National Church will clear away from its altars all crucifixes, Bibles, and pictures of saints. On the altars, there must be nothing but Mein Kampf being Hitler's
autobiography
and exposition of his philosophy. On the altars, there must be nothing but Mein Kampf, and to the left of the altar, a sword. So a sword to replace the crucifix. And on the day of its foundation, of the National Church, the Christian cross must be removed from all churches, cathedrals, and chapels, and must be superseded by the only unconquerable symbol, the swastika. So that is the Christianity of Nazism, so to speak. As a matter of fact, they wrote a hymn for this new faith. The time of the cross has gone now, the sun wheel shall arise, and so with God we shall be free at last and give our people their honor back.
And the sun wheel was the swastika.
Was the swastika. So this was the liberation of the German people from the imprisonment of the cross through its replacement by the swastika.
Not too different than, unfortunately, you hear in some colleges with freshmen. Let's indoctrinate you, break the chains that your parents have put on you, and let's bring you into this new order. And so it is something that's still alive today, this concept that we have to be on guard against. But
yeah, and we also have to be on guard against political messianism, because that was another element of this, that we live in a materialistic kind of secular world, and as you talked about last time, we tend to see history in terms of power mad individuals and, you know, countries fighting for dominance and resources, and not tend to see them in terms of spiritual warfare. But here's a couple of direct quotes from Hitler, who we've all heard about all too much. This is from Hitler. He says, "Those who see in Nazism nothing more than a political movement know scarcely anything about it. It is even more than a religion. It is the will to create mankind anew." So explicitly, you know, it's messianic. It's the will to recreate mankind. It's not only religious, but it's more than a religion. You know, it's basically a messianic religion. Throughout, wherever you look at Nazism, you see this aping, this diabolical caricature of Christianity. As I mentioned, you have the thousand-year reign of the Third Reich, which is an aping of the thousand-year reign of Christ that's mentioned in the Apocalypse. The Aryan race takes the place of the Jewish people as the chosen people. The blood purity takes the place of holiness as the vehicle of salvation, the means of salvation. And, of course, Hitler takes the place of Christ as the Messiah in this religion.
Even relics, I think you point out in the book, they used the blood flag.
That's right. They had fake relics that Hitler's first attempt at taking power was aborted. It failed. It was called the Beer Hall Putsch.
Right.
And some early Nazis were killed when that revolt was put down. And a flag was dipped in their blood. And that flag became like the primary relic of the Third Reich. And after that, every other Nazi flag which was issued by Hitler, he would touch that blood-stained flag to the new flag to kind of make that new flag a third-class relic.
And yet this wasn't Hitler or the Nazis. This is Satan from the beginning of time, has always tried to distort the goodness of God, what God has given us, so that we can't, whether it's to mock it or whether it's so that we can't see clearly. We see that whenever Satan is there.
Well, he's always, he is an aper. And he doesn't create out of whole cloth. He doesn't create something new. What he does is he takes something of God and he twists it and makes this kind of, you know, in the way that an ape is a caricature of a human being. I mean, it kind of looks like a man, but at the same time, it's kind of grotesque. I don't want to offend any of our viewers who may have the apes, no, but who may be fond of simians. But, you know, there is something kind of caricature-like.
Right.
And that's how Satan works. And he does it with religions. When he makes a satanic religion, it'll be an aping of Christianity. Satanism, if you look at Satanism, it usually has an aping of the Catholic sacraments. It has black masses. People have heard of black masses. Right. That's a diabolical aping, you know, of the genuine mass and so forth. He's even come up with entire religions, which are diabolical caricatures of Christianity.
For a later coming show.
And, you know, you see it throughout. Maybe I'll introduce this delicately here. Another foundational element that lay behind the Third Reich and Nazism, which we're not going to address at length here, is that the God has given man the faculty to cooperate with him in the creation of new immortal souls. It is, in a sense, the most elevated thing that God has entrusted to man. He's made man a co-creator with him in creating immortal human souls to populate heaven for all eternity. Of course, the devil should make a diabolical caricature of that, should debase and distort and make a caricature of that uniquely elevated gift of man and use it for his debasement of man and for his insult to God. And that also was one of the underpinnings of the Third Reich.
That's a typical characteristic whenever Satan is there, that we see these offenses against the sixth commandment. And, you know, as Dr. Scott Hahn has talked about with the with the marriage union, where we get a glimpse into the Trinity. How do you explain the Trinity to someone who has nothing to view, you know, the deepest mystery? And if he can take that and distort that through distorted relations, and as we said last week, to please read the book so we wouldn't have to go into great detail here, if he can distort that, then again, he can draw us away from God. And I was amazed, and your book covered it very delicately, but I was amazed at the level of depravity. And then yet I shouldn't have been, because as you say, this is always
necessary. It was necessary to coarsen the conscience. It was necessary to sever the relationship with God. And it is mankind's Achilles heel, essentially. It's his most vulnerable area.
Right. And as you point out from Pope John Paul's Theology of the Body, it's this beautiful gift that God has given. And here he has to distort that.
He has to distort that. Going back to the messianic pretensions of Hitler, a Nazi journal in 1939 called Schwarzkorps asked its readers what the Führer meant to them, what Hitler meant to them. And here are some of the responses by the readers of the magazine. The Führer is the visible personal expression of what in our youth was represented as God. Another reader responded, I have never felt the divine power as near as in the greatness of our Führer. Another reader, the Führer's portrait hangs in my office as well as in my drawing room at home. Every glance at it releases in me the feelings that devout people allege they experience in earnest prayer.
I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curve, so I'm going to couch it with that. But in an earlier part of the book, you talk about how Satan works to get man to answer to him, and how he starts very small with very, very small sins against God, and then as that builds, it becomes harder and harder for that person to break that bond. When I hear this, and I think this wasn't just Hitler, and I think we have a thought in our mind that most people didn't know what was going on. You know, that the Germans, had they known, or had anyone else known, they would have come. But yet, when I hear this, They saw him as this Messiah as well. And would this be a direct result of what you explained earlier in the book, how Satan takes hold of us through our sin and then distorts what we are actually able to see?
Yeah, I think that's a fair characterization. But there's another element there, too, which is very telling when he talks about when the reader says, I have never felt the divine powers near, which is there is a diabolical power. I mean, there is a tremendous spiritual force that the devil is able to assert. And you see this exercise at times in political leaders. In other words, you know, everybody who went into the presence of Mother Teresa felt a warm glow coming from her. People in the presence of Hitler felt a glow. I'm not sure how warm it was. Maybe it was really hellishly hot. But they felt an intoxicating power.
That's interesting, because we look at Mother Teresa as being the grace flowing.
It was the grace flowing.
And I had not thought of a diabolical
grace.
Exactly.
And I think that if you're in a state of sacramental grace, you're not subject to it. Right. So you just feel revulsion at these people.
Right.
But if you're not in a state of grace, you actually feel that power, whatever you're going to call it, that caricature of grace flowing, and it feels to you like a divine power. It feels to you, you know, pleasant, consoling, intoxicating. And Hitler's rallies were famous for women fainting and losing control. I mean, they were just like so swept away by this power that emanated from him. And unfortunately, we've seen that in recent American politics, where you'll have a charismatic politician where, excuse me, but I listen to what he's saying, you listen to what he's saying, you know, and it's empty words and nonsense. And yet, during the campaign, women were consistently fainting at the rallies.
Right.
Isn't that the same force flowing through them?
It's a great time to say, go to confession, get in the state of grace, so that you can't be deceived. Because we can see here where clearly Satan has the power to deceive if you are not in the state of grace.
And he has the power to deceive in this way over individuals. And there's a phrase in German Zeitgeist, like corporate spirit of a population at a point in time. And
Zeitgeist
literally translated meaning spirit of the time. But there'll be like and obviously in Nazi Germany there was there was an individual blinding of individual spirits, but there was a corporate blinding of the corporate like spirit of the population. And you see that in the United States today, that basically if a society embraces immorality as a society, then it's like the entire spiritual mental atmosphere becomes darker, and it's easier for people to be led astray, and the culture itself gets led astray. And I think, again, you see that in the United States now, because contraception has been so embraced, because sexual immorality has been so embraced, the people don't make sense, newspapers don't make sense, TV shows don't make sense. There's a common way of thinking that has almost permeated everything, has crept in, to all the nooks and crannies, and you really have to be in a state of grace to be thinking independently of that, not to be swept away with that tide.
We go back to St. Paul's letter of darkening the intellect, that at this point we as a society are allowing the intellect to be darkened as a society at whole.
That's right. And St. Paul, you're referring to the first chapter of Romans, and St. Paul in there, by the way, also makes the equation with religion replacing God with created beings, and also with sins against the sixth commandment.
I'm going to read that, since it is so applicable to exactly what you've been talking about through this series, and particularly through this show. So they are without excuse, for although they know God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they, because futile in their thinking and their senseless minds were darkened, claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for the images resembling mortal man or birds or animals or reptiles. And this goes back from images of mortal man we see with Hitler. We go back to the Egyptian gods being the birds, the animals, and reptiles. And it goes on, which is interesting, with the violations against the sixth commandment. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and saved the creature rather than the created, who is blessed forever. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. Their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in their own persons the due penalty for their error. So we have been forewarned.
You have been forewarned, yes, and nothing new under the sun. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The devil, time after time, century after century, uses the same strategy over and over again.
Well, I say this every show, but once again, thank you. This has been very helpful with the book, and I'm sure it's helpful to our viewers in their formation to see how Satan works, so that they might use that both in their own spiritual development and in that of their families to help their children avoid these traps, where we see these sins against the flesh, where we see these signs of occultism. Avoid them, even in their smallest forms, avoid them and turn to God. So thank you again for joining us, and thank you for joining us. Next week we'll begin chapter 7, and we'll continue our journey on Salvation is from the Jews. Thank you. God bless.